The international attention is growing in the case of Maryam Ibrahim, the Sudanese woman sentenced to death for refusing to renounce Christianity. New Hampshire is paying particularly close attention as she is married to a Manchester man, Daniel Wani, who has been in Sudan for the past year awaiting her trial. Ibrahim gave birth in prison this week, but she still faces 100 lashes and the death penalty after being convicted of apostasy and adultery. To learn more, I'm joined by Eric Reeves, a professor at Smith College, who has studied and written about Sudan extensively over the past 15 years. Welcome to All Things Considered.
Thank you.
How common is a case like Maryam Ibrahim's? Is this something that happens often in Sudan?
I don't think it happens often, or at least it's not reported often, but it's certainly got many precedents. Usually human rights organizations rally to the cause and bring sufficient notoriety to a given case that it is dismissed under various pretenses by the Sudanese judicial system. And I expect that will be the case on this occasion. The regime in Khartoum doesn't wish to be seen bowing to pressure from human rights groups, but they also know to carry out the sentence at this point would be immensely counterproductive for them in their international relations.
Given that international pressure, then, what is the thinking behind these charges which come out of Sharia law, and how much of this case, then, is about the domestic politics inside Sudan, and how much is it actually about Maryam Ibrahim?
I think it's primarily about the desire by some within the regime and some within the political hierarchy in Khartoum to appear more strongly Islamist than rivals. This is showing your Islamist credentials if you're willing to go forward with this barbaric punishment. It's important to note that Sharia law is construed differently in different Muslim countries, and in particular, Hudud, the penal provisions of Sharia, vary quite widely. Sudan is notorious for having especially brutal provisions for apostasy, adultery, manufacture of alcohol, and a number of other so-called crimes under Sharia.
I'm told that in particular it specifies even how big the stone is to be used in carrying out the death by stoning.
Yeah, that's one of the most shocking discoveries I made in my researches on Hudud. You don't want, apparently, the stones to be too small because it will take too long to kill the person, inevitably a woman. You don't want the stones too large because she'll die too quickly. It's a perverse kind of thinking to exact as much pain in the act of execution.
The leaders of the Sudanese regime have said that now that the non-Muslim part of the country, South Sudan, is its own state, that the government can more rigidly enforce some of these laws. How likely is it that other women might be in this same situation, and what, if anything, might be done about that?
I think, unfortunately, one consequence of this case gaining such profile is that if there are future cases, they're much less likely to gain significant international attention. The regime in Khartoum has been highly hypocritical when it comes to various claims of tolerance, which are, in fact, specified in the Quran. They've been confiscating churches, church lands. They've been harassing Christians, Christian ministers. They've been making life as difficult as possible for Christians in the north. And this is true even before secession in July of 2011. Now, this is a regime that really does despise non-Arabs, non-Muslims.
Professor Eric Reeves, thanks so much for your time today.